This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's a Joy Law podcast from Jack and Dean on Joy.
Joining us on the line to talk about some recent developments in the High Court is Chris from KHQ Lawyers. Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, Chris.
Hi.
Are you avoiding me?
I know, I feel a bit like that, hey.
I don't like
I'm just trying to let other people come and play with you guys too because you're so much fun.
I'll stop it.
Good answer.
I know. I rehearsed that all morning.
Now, Chris, there's been some developments in the High Court that relate to sperm donors and their role in conception. What's the story?
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago, the High Court handed down a decision about a case where a donor was seeking to be deemed a legal parent of a child that he had conceived with a woman, although he was a sperm donor when it happened. It's interesting because it involves two women, Susan and Margaret, who actually have two children. But when they call it child B because they anonymise everything in the family court. When child B was actually born, Susan, the birth mother, was not in a relationship at the time. And so we've actually been saying this for a while, a number of people that have been advocating to change the Family Law Act is, as it currently reads, if a woman has a child to a donor and they are in a relationship with another person, whether it be same-sex or heterosexual, the donor is considered not to be a parent of that child, even though it's their genetic material that's conceived the child. What the Family Law Act doesn't say is that if a single woman conceives a child using a donor, it actually doesn't say what the status of that donor is. And so for a long time, and I know we've covered this in previous podcasts, but we've been saying, you know, the law as it stands, if a gay couple conceive a child with a lesbian couple, for example, the gay men have no rights over the child, no legal parentage over those kids. And so what happened in this case, the women say, or the mother says, it was never the intention that he would be a father, but what happened after the child was born is he played a regular role in the child's life, and she referred to him as dad, you know, he saw them every second weekend, so it's pretty much a co-parenting relationship. Sorry, Dean.
No, so there's a couple of issues here, isn't there? So we've talked in the past about the need to get things in writing before you enter into these relationships.
Number one rule.
Correct.
But it may not have actually made any difference in this case by the sounds of things.
No, and it's funny because I was speaking to someone today about this exact fact. We can do a donor agreement, which are not legally binding, but they're the only evidence you have of proof of intention at the time of conception. But what I've said to people over and over again is I can write an agreement for you that can be airtight and it can say the donor is going to have absolutely no role in your child's life. But if when the child's born, you turn around and the child spends every second weekend, really the intention back at conception is kind of null and void. So if it is intended that a donor is to play no role in a child's life, then you need to enforce that. Okay, the difference in this case was, and what went to the family court and ultimately to the High Court, and what the High Court says is because there's actually no definition, go figure, in the Family Law Act of what a parent is, okay? So the family court said Section 60H, which deals with the status of a donor when it's a couple, okay, when a couple conceives a child from a donor, they say it's very clear, but it's not clear in relation to a single person, lesbian, heterosexual, otherwise, okay? And it said because of that, the term parent should be read broadly and it should be defined as if it was being defined in a dictionary, okay? And that they said the Family Law Act, it wasn't there to limit who a parent was, but to actually allow for parents. It's not an exhaustive list is what they said. And interestingly, what they said at the end is, and this is a bit which has gotten everybody a bit worried, they didn't comment or make a judgment about if there's a man or a donor who donates sperm to a single woman and has absolutely no intention of playing a role in that child's life, whether they would fall into the category of being a parent.
Yes.
So, you know, there are so many single women that we see through our work, and that's only probably a, you know, small handful of them, that want to have a baby with a donor. And the problem is that now we can't definitively say to them, you're fine, he won't be a parent, because this case says actually he hasn't been tried, so we can't say whether he will or not.
It's interesting that the relationship status of a woman is a key determinant of the parentage of a child.
Yeah.
In the scenario.
Yeah. I think what they did when they amended the Act is they went, okay, we've got a lot of lesbian women that are having children. And there were a lot of sperm donors on birth certificates that didn't want to be on birth certificates. And so they said, right, we've got to fix that. So they fixed just that part, and they didn't allow, you know, co-parenting arrangements. They didn't allow, you know, more than three parents. What if there's two gay guys and one single woman? Or it just was so restrictive. And 100%, Dean, it's all determined on whether or not she's in a relationship.
And so again, in this scenario, though, we have the donor actually becoming an active, playing an active role in the child's life.
Yeah.
But if he hadn't, it's unclear whether the courts would have found differently. Is that what you're
saying? Exactly.
You're right.
Exactly. And if the biological Susan had been in a relationship with Margaret when she conceived, the donor wouldn't be a parent. Like, that's how... Yeah. So it doesn't make any sense. And can I say, you know... And I can say this because I've actually got a donor baby in my belly as we speak.
What?
You know, I know. That's how long since you haven't seen
tell me.
Tell
me that.
I know.
Oh. We don't talk anymore, Chris. We just don't talk anymore.
Oh, I know, we don't. But so it's actually been, so I've been following this, obviously,
yes.
Because I have, you know, it's very close to my heart. Oh. But what I think in this case is whether or not he's a parent, they actually got the judgment right, because ultimately, what they wanted to do, the women, is they wanted to relocate to New Zealand. And, you know, if they relocated, this child would not have an ongoing relationship with someone who's been their father. They call them dad, you know.
Yeah.
So I think in this case, they actually got it right. But what is really concerning is that I don't think they've turned their minds to really the LGBTIQ+, there you go, Jax,
thank
community.
You.
We have so many different family formations, and the Family Law Act just does not cover that. And I think by saying, okay, a donor can be a parent if there's a single woman, then we're not really allowing, you know, a donor to be a parent when there's two, you know, a lesbian couple and a gay guy, for example, that want to bring up a child together. That gay guy actually has no rights. So we're just not doing this right. Like, it has to change. And I think this case will push for change. But at the moment, it's really hard to give legal advice. And the one thing I can say definitively is a lot of this judgment, when you read it, talks about the intention.
Yes.
And so what I can say is I still maintain 100% that having a donor agreement, so in writing, signed by the parties and both of them getting legal advice, is the best way to protect yourself at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any likelihood that this decision could be appealed to a higher or different body?
No,
there's no higher than
this
high
was
court,
the last.
Is there? That's it.
Yeah, so nice. It went from the family court to the full court of the family court and then to the High Court of Australia. So that's, they took it all the way to the top.
Oh, so they've probably been managing this case for years, yeah?
Yeah, it has. It's been around, and there's been a lot of speculation about it.
Yes.
And that's why it was really highly anticipated when it came out. We all just went, oh, my God. Like, I think it's a very good judgment, and I think in terms of the best interest of the child, they 100% got it right. But what it's done is it's put a massive spanner in the works in terms of how we're going to manage this moving forward, and there 100% needs to be legislative change.
Right. So I guess if anybody is considering sperm donation at the moment, and they are perhaps at the start of this process, get some legal advice, yeah?
Get legal advice.
Yeah, I actually did a blog that might help that's on our webpage, which kind of summarises it in plain English, because when you read the judgment, it's kind of very overwhelming with all the definitions, but that might help to understand some of the way they've determined the case.
Mm-hmm. And where's that blog?
It's www.khq.com.au, and if you just click on my profile, the blog is at the bottom of that.
Fantastic.
Christine.
No worries.
Thank you very much, and all the best for your baby.
Yeah, how far are you?
Thank you. I'm only 16 weeks.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah.
We'll stop knitting.
See, so it hasn't been that long,
guys.
Not that long.
That's fine. All right.
I'll pop by soon.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys. See you.
Bye.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.